Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Christopher Arndt, who is a former partner at Select Equity Group, Inc., who in 2010 turned his attention to public policy issues, focusing in particular on accelerating the adoption of clean energy. He has served as director of the New York Chapter of Environmental Entrepreneurs and currently serves on the board of the Natural Resources Defense Council, the NRDC's Action Fund. He's the author of the new book, The Rights Road to Serfdom, The Danger of Conservatism Unbound, From Hayek to Trump. Welcome to Background Briefing, Christopher Arndt.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And people have warned before about this sort of, well, in fact, Warren Buffett said once that America's in danger of becoming a plantation economy. And I guess given that the Republican Party, the GOP, has been taken over by Southerners, who have, there's vestiges of feudalism, certainly in the South, do you see this country sort of economically divided or heading in that direction, in effect, going back to a sort of a pre-Civil War division? Because after all, it was the British Tories, the Royalists, who supported the Confederacy.
Yeah, well, I think what's difficult about today, there is an issue of income inequality. But when you mention a plantation, an economy, what you also think of is privilege. And, you know, the foundation of one of the cornerstones of our liberal democracy is an even set of rules that apply to all. And one of the things that I do in my book, The Rights Road to Serfdom, is I make the point that there's two political traditions on the American right. And there's a political tradition of conserving the principles on which our country was founded. But there's also an older conservatism, a monarchical conservatism, which stands by privilege. And I think that is one of the drivers on the American right today, and that's one of the biggest issues that we now face.
Well, certainly the Republican Party is no longer the party of the northeastern elites. The Rockefeller Republicans are entirely extinct. So it has changed, clearly. And do you see any way that there can be a comeback from the traditional conservatives to wrest power back from the Tea Party and the southern wing of the party?
Yeah, I think to get ourselves back on the right track where, you know, both sides are, so to speak, playing on the field of a liberal democracy, and we don't have one of our political parties, or at least the major power centers of our political parties, you know, represented by a leader like Donald Trump, very much pushing against some of the norms of a liberal democracy, is, and I make this case in the final chapter of my book, we need to start thinking about government in ways how it supports political freedom. The title of my book is The Rights Road to Serfdom. That's a reference to an older book called The Road to Serfdom that was written by F.A. Hayek, and that book was a touchstone for conservatives for decades and decades. His argument at the time was that the political left had, or factions of it, had gone too far and thought the government should be involved in everything. You know, my book is a reference to the title of that, but I argue that the pendulum has swung the other way. And one of the biggest issues that we have is kind of a fundamentalist belief or enthusiasm on the right to always be against government. And if we're always against government, this has swung in such a way that we start to be suspicious of and, in fact, directly undermine the government institutions that are required for a free society.
Well, of course, it is a great irony that the Donald Trump, he has a cabinet essentially full of billionaires, but he got elected on all kinds of populist promises. And it seems that his supporters are going to have to learn the hard way. But we, the rest of us, and after all, the majority, over 3 million more people voted for the other candidate, will be collateral damage in this unfortunate exercise. But my sense, Christopher, is that things are going to get an awful lot worse in terms of deregulation, in terms of turning us on the road towards serfdom. For example, the new FDA appointee, they're going to lift the requirement for testing drugs, which means that the pharmaceutical companies will be able to test drugs themselves. And 9 out of 10 drugs tested don't meet the effectiveness. There's two standards, safe and effective. Safe means that they can't kill you and they're supposed to heal you, but effective means they have to actually work. And apparently, according to FDA's records, that 9 out of 10 drugs submitted to the FDA are proven not to be effective. So, in effect, you remove that provision, which is a role that government plays and should play, people will be buying useless drugs. I mean, I bring that up because it seems such a flagrant example of how far off the rails we are heading in this sort of anti-government jihad.
Yes, I agree. We're on a dangerous path. I think if we're looking for a silver lining right now, nobody would say our political system was completely healthy prior to Trump. But sometimes an infection or something new can stimulate an immune response that ultimately leads to a healthier patient, if that analogy makes sense. And we have seen a pretty, in the first 100 days here, strong response, immune response. And, you know, the question is how much that can be sustained through the 2018 elections. I also think that, you know, if people start to recognize that government does have a fundamental role in a liberal democracy and that our institutions are important, and we can start to focus on solving common interests, then that, you know, in applying government where it needs to be active, not everywhere, but because it can certainly overreach, I think that starts to allow a basis for bipartisan cooperation. The problem is if you kind of hold this jihad against government, as you described it accurately, you don't focus on common problems or solving common interests, but you start to focus on demonizing government even further or focusing on an external menace, whether real or made up, and really playing to our worst angels. So I think, you know, the key is dispensing with this philosophy that government is always the problem. This is something I call the freedom fraud. And thinking about government where it really does reinforce the institutions that support liberty.
Well, Christopher, when you talk about making up demons and false fears, to my mind, there's nothing more extraordinary than how we are manipulated in terms of our fear of terrorism when statistics indicate that you're much, much more likely to be hit by lightning than you are killed by a terrorist. And the statistics are extraordinary, how rare, how few people are affected by terrorism. Yet we are so afraid of terrorism, and we're so afraid now of North Korea, and we're afraid of Syria, and we're afraid of, you know, ISIS and all of these external enemies, most of which don't amount to much. Yet the one thing that threatens not just us here in the United States, but the entire planet, is global warming. And that's a real threat. And that will soon happen and won't be long before the waves will be lapping at the doorstep of Mar-a-Lago down there in Florida. So how do you explain the fact that we Americans are so easily manipulated by these false and phony fears, or at least exaggerated fears, and can't face, and particularly the Trump people who are all in denial about global warming, can't face the real fear, which is a real and present danger, global warming?
Yeah. So I think what we have that is unique in the United States is a mix of special interest influence on our government, but that's linked to a false idea of freedom and a false ideology. And it's those two things working together that are ultimately very powerful. So people have talked about the Koch brothers and their spending on the political system as almost another political party, in the half of the, close to $800 million of spending. Special interests are always a threat to a liberal democracy, but what makes, I think, the Koch brothers' spending particularly potent is it's joined with this false idea of freedom. And, you know, one thing that I would hope Democrats would start to do a better job of is talk about their political priorities in terms of freedom and in terms of the American ideal of liberty. Really the American right has taken that idea, which is a fundamental idea, and special interests have used that for their own interests. And that's one of the reasons why we're, say, unique in the world in our current president not recognizing global warming as a real threat. You know, that's been a long political campaign, which started in the late 1980s, to characterize freedom in a certain way, which benefited special interests, fossil fuel interests in particular.
Well, clearly the Koch brothers, even though their mantra is freedom, it's freedom for corporations. And of course, corporations were made persons in law. And now we have another corporatist on the Supreme Court. So it does seem odd that the real God-made man is being sort of subjugated, if you will, to the man-made God. But in the broadest sense, though, when you talk about the freedom fraud, as you do in your book, Christopher Arndt, The Right's Road to Serfdom, The Danger of Conservatism Unbound from Hayek to Trump, I recall, though, when the last address that FDR gave, he gave this speech called, I think it was called The Four Freedoms or something. I can't remember the number of the freedoms, but they were essentially like freedom from hunger, freedom to have shelter, freedom to have a job, freedom to have health care. Can you go back to FDR and inculcate the notion of freedom into those things that, as again, social democracies take for granted? And one, of course, it's no small irony that one of the greatest moves that the United States ever made was the Marshall Plan at the end of World War II. And we restored democracy in Western Europe and in Japan, and we installed social democracy in Germany and Japan. But we don't have it at home, but they have it. The Germans have, you know, 6 weeks vacation, complete health care, and they've got an extremely robust economy.
Yeah, well, in my book, I talk about three or four, actually, spheres where, you know, government has a role in the economy. And the first two spheres are really about limiting arbitrary power. And this is where, and that's about restraint. Freedom, civil freedom, is fundamentally about restraint and limiting arbitrary power. So a large corporation, or so, you know, authoritarian can't do whatever they want to do to us. You know, we have inalienable rights. They can't torture us. Or, you know, a large corporation can't pollute on us. Those are kind of the fundamental pillars of a liberal democracy. On top of that, we can talk about where government has an expanded role, you know, in terms of a welfare capacity. And, you know, in that area, I think there's, you know, on the playing field of liberal democracy, there's a, you know, different sides, and we can have a reasonable debate about how far the government can and should go to provide a safety net for most people. But, you know, my concern is not about that segment necessarily, but it's about, you know, fundamental principles of restraint and the rule of law, of political pluralism, of facts that are common to all, and of a restrained defensive military, which is under civilian control. Those are kind of the four pillars of a liberal democracy. And, you know, the concern that I had that you could start to see on the American right going back to the early 2000s and has culminated or really further enabled under Trump is, you know, much of the enthusiasm for his candidacy is for a single person, you know, a lone strongman to solve our problems and for him to do whatever he wants to do to solve those problems. And that type of freedom of an individual just to do whatever they want to do, that stands directly in contrast to the principles of a liberal democracy.
Well, Donald Trump just congratulated this despot who won a rigged election in Turkey, Erdogan, and half the population are furious, and the Europeans are furious and said that the whole thing was rigged and there wasn't a level playing field. But Donald Trump goes ahead and congratulates this guy, undercutting half of the population of Turkey. So I think we've already seen both his authoritarian tendencies, but also his disregard for democratic values.
Yeah, and I think it's you could go even further than disregard to democratic values. And, you know, and I don't use the word authoritarian or autocrat lightly, but authoritarians have common characteristics. They tend to jail or threaten to jail political opponents. They make blatant lies as a show of power. They don't believe in inalienable rights, and they often resort to cruel and unusual punishment or torture. They don't respect religious toleration, and in fact, they use religious division for their own political advantage, and they promote a strident kind of resentful nationalism. And so we see a lot of these things in Donald Trump right now. You know, it may be surprising to have the president of the United States just as the position to be congratulating Erdogan or, you know, giving Putin a pat on the back. But, you know, this is actually what Donald Trump ran on in a certain sense, is a very strongman type narrative, which is everything is horrible and I alone can fix it. And we're surrounded by enemies and I alone can protect you. So there's an enthusiasm for this type of authoritarianism or to rule in this authoritarian way. And, you know, we have to realize this is not a drill. This is where we are, and we have to methodically work our way back towards, you know, again, kind of a playing field, I would call it, that's based on, you know, basic values of a liberal democracy.
Well, Christopher Arnott, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Ian, I thank you for your time.
And again, I'm speaking with Christopher Arnott, who's a former partner at Select Equity Group, Inc., who in 2010 turned his attention to public policy issues, focusing in particular on accelerating the adoption of clean energy. He has served as director of the New York Chapter of Environmental Entrepreneurs and currently serves on the board of the Natural Resource Defense Council, the NRDC's Action Fund, and he's the author of the new book, The Right's Road to Serfdom, The Danger of Conservatism Unbound, From Hayek to Trump. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.